Welcome to Mancy, a podcast about the history of magic and its impact on our culture. In each episode, we cover a different method of Mancy, or method of magic. I'm RJ Walker, spoken word artist and writer, and this is my co-host.
L. Alder. I'm a professional psychic and a solitary eclectic witch. I've been working as a professional psychic for 7 years, and I typically use tarot cards, Akashic Record, and mediumship when I do my readings. So this is kind of a fun way for us to look at the different forms of Mancy and see what we can make of them.
This specific Mancy might just be one of the most mainstream practices of magic still used today. In fact, growing up, I was taught this method of divination for myself. You'd get out your scriptures, you'd pray really hard, asking God for insight, or you'd ask him a question. Then you'd open your scriptures to a random page, read the first verse your eyes would fall on. And this is a practice known as bibliomancy, divination by book. Now, bibliomancy can be done with any book, not just the Bible, though the Bible is the most common book used in bibliomancy, especially today. It's commonly done with other holy books and spiritual texts. The Chinese I Ching, or Book of Changes, is almost exclusively used for bibliomancy and was designed to be used as such. You might recall Philip K. Dick's book, The Man in the High Castle. It was later adapted into a Amazon Prime series. The characters would use the I Ching to make predictions, drawing lots with yarrow stalks to determine what passage of the I Ching they would read. Philip K. Dick himself used the I Ching to help write his book. The works of ancient poets and philosophers seem to grow beyond the stories they wrote and become stories themselves. One poet in particular went through a centuries-long metamorphosis that transformed him into a full-blown wizard. That man was named Virgil, and his epic poetry would be used as tools for bibliomancy that inspired kings and decided the fates of empires. In part one, we're going to use Virgil's Aeneid for bibliomancy. Then in part two, we'll use my own book of poems about Pokemon for bibliomancy.
Yeah.
Let's see if I am the magical poet that Virgil was.
Did Virgil not have a last name?
We just call him Virgil.
Okay, got it.
He has a Latin Roman name, but everybody just calls him Virgil. Like, if you, like, Wikipedia him, it just says Virgil. And then in parentheses, his, like, Roman name.
Well, Virgil sounds like the lumberjack that lives in the woods. So I'm excited to read his book.
Yeah, his Latin name is Publius Virgilius Maro. But we can just call him Virgil.
Cool.
That's what he's known as.
Virgil, got it.
Now, you may recognize Virgil as being Dante's guide into hell in Dante's Inferno. And his name is synonymous with magic and guidance. In fact, some believe that the magician tarot card was inspired specifically by Virgil, like the art of it. The Welsh version of his name became synonymous with the word magician or wizard. Virgil himself has become more mythology than man, inspiring characters in Devil May Cry and Halo 3 ODST.
Okay.
Have you played those, Elle?
No, I haven't.
Okay, there's a scene in Devil May Cry, though, where they're, like, sword fighting, and they swing their swords so fast, and it's a rainstorm, that they cut every single raindrop, and it creates, like, this bubble of, like, air, and it's really cool. Now, how did Virgil achieve such a massive reputation as one of the greatest wizards in history?
How? I don't know.
He wrote a really, really long piece of Homer fan fiction.
I have been explaining this as I'm like, I don't know, we're going to read a book that's Homer fan fiction. I'm, you know, I'm excited. I'm ready.
It's called The Aeneid, And it is a near shameless ripoff of Homer's Odyssey and Iliad smashed together into one book, and it's meant to explain the glorious founding of Rome by the demigod Aeneas. Plus, it's written in Latin, which always sounds magical and spooky.
It does.
There's like historical reasons for that. There were all these like Latin books from the Roman Empire that were written in a dead language, and people were just like, I can't read it. It must be magical. And they thought all these random Latin texts were like magic grimoires, and you could be burned for witchcraft for having one, unless you were part of the church.
I feel like so many things are like attributed to witchcraft when it's really just like people don't understand what the fuck they're talking about.
Yeah. I mean, with the Aeneid being written in Latin, it was one of those books that was like accepted. Like, this is written in Latin. Mm. And it's also like a really important, like, historical book. And you see the rise of Christianity, the Aeneid kind of being accepted because it was basically Roman propaganda.
So, was there a reason that they accepted that? So I actually have never heard of this book, and I feel like I'm like pretty well aware of like literary things. So I've never heard of this book. So is there a reason that we needed this book instead of the Odyssey and the Iliad? Like,
so the reason the Aeneid is important is, like I said, it's meant to mythologize and explain the glorious founding of Rome and justify a lot of their empire shenanigans.
Oh, got it.
So Romans themselves were not exactly the most literary people, and so they just would shamelessly, like, steal from Greek culture.
Oh, yeah, that's true. I know that, yeah.
And, like, that's not very Roman to have Homer be, like, the stories everyone knows, because everybody knew the Odyssey. Everybody knew the Iliad. So Virgil wrote the Aeneid in 19 BC. And there are scholars and professors who have devoted their entire lives to interpreting this piece of epic fan fiction. Mm. I'll do my best to summarize what it is. Aeneas is an epic hero. He was a Trojan demigod, with his mother being Aphrodite or Venus, the Romanized Aphrodite.
Okay.
Virgil, being Roman and all, Romanized all the, like, Greek gods. And this is really where a lot of what we know about, like, Romanized, like, Greek culture, like, comes from, is the Aeneid as, like, a historical book. Virgil was sent to Greece specifically to research writing the Aeneid as a piece of Roman propaganda. It was commissioned by Caesar Augustus Octavia to be the new Roman epic that would eclipse Homer's works, glorify the emperor, and affirm Rome's divine rights to be an empire.
It's manifest destiny, but like a long time ago.
It really is. And a lot of what I'm like seeing about the Aeneid, it reminds me of the Book of Mormon.
Mm.
Where Joseph Smith, when he wrote the Book of Mormon, tapped into this like cultural belief that we were divinely supposed to be here in America and that we weren't like horrible colonizers, and like affirmed that bias for everybody. And so they were like, yeah, I'm on board with this.
Well, so what's really interesting is I went to Egypt last year, last April. And I didn't know this about Egypt, but there are like hieroglyphics across everything, like every mm-hmm. single surface they had. And we had an Egyptologist that went with us like on the tour to explain things. And basically they did the same thing, but like in stone outside of temples or inside of the temple, like explaining why they were allowed to kill certain people or why certain kings should have died, how different gods died. Like at one point, they literally just decided to have new gods. They were like, yeah, those gods don't work for us anymore. These are the new ones.
Mm.
And they would just write like basically the hieroglyphics and be like, yeah, that god died and this is the new one. Like, and I was like, well, why? Like what led them to do that? And literally the Egyptologist was like, they did. They just wrote it. That just was the thing. So people have been doing this to justify their shitty behavior for a very long time.
Yeah. Most of what Virgil had written before the Aeneid was didactic poetry and pastoral poetry. Basically, moral lessons and poems about nature. With the Aeneid, Virgil's goal was to eclipse Homer, who was considered this, like, the greatest, like, storyteller of all time. Mm. He was a legend in his own right. In fact, Homer's works were also used for bibliomancy, kind of. It's said that Socrates was able to predict his own execution using the Iliad, except Socrates didn't believe in the written word. He believed books rotted your brain because you were supposed to memorize everything. So he pulled the line out of the Iliad from his own, like, memorized brain, just, like, meditating on it. The line was, on the third day, you would reach fertile Phthia. And so Socrates knew that he would be executed in 3 days.
Just by, like, he had, like, a little catalog in his brain. Like,
honestly,
the little, like, dividers.
Socrates was, like, really pretentious about it. And some say that Socrates didn't even exist and that he was just, like, a stand-in for all the pretentious people that existed in ancient Greece. And
they just mashed them together.
Yeah. And but, like, he really, like, did not believe in the written word. He was like, books rotted your brain. Look at this idiot over here writing things down because he's too dumb to remember stuff.
So actually what's really interesting about that is in, like, tarot and, like, specifically with the Kabbalah and Kabbalistic beliefs before, like, that kind of got converted into tarot, the only people who were allowed to know the Kabbalah and learn the Kabbalah were men that were so old they would never do anything with it because it's believed that, yeah, that's literally the thing. It's believed that it's all of, like, the good and all of the bad. And so if you give people that information and they're bad people, they can capitalize on that.
It's the forbidden fruit.
It is the forbidden fruit, you know? Isn't all knowledge forbidden in some ways? Anyway, it's really interesting because they never wrote down tarot cards or any of that until I think Aleister Crowley kind of came into the scene, and then he was very
greasy mother.
Yes, very demonized, and is, like, even today people are like, no, we don't, that's not a thing. Even I'm like, I don't really love Aleister Crowley. So it's kind of interesting that that's, I think, echoed in kind of that ancient knowledge and the ways that we pass it down.
Yeah, Aleister Crowley, also a freaking poet. You can look up his poems on Poetry Foundation.
I maybe knew that somewhere in the deep, like, bowels of my brain,
it's
but,
like,
I forgot.
This weird, like, Lovecraftian, like, grody poetry.
Have to find this. Yeah.
The Romans, not exactly being known for their literature, and Virgil being the guy who was, he had some big shoes to fill when it came to taking on Homer and writing the epic of epics. It took him 10 years to write the Aeneid, and even when he was done, he was constantly revising it. Aeneas had to be a reflection of Augustus, so the hero was like a stand-in for the emperor.
Mm-hmm.
But a good writer knows that characters have to be three-dimensional. They have to have flaws and challenges. And for most of Virgil's life, Rome had been embroiled in a horrible civil war. Things were super polarized in Rome at the time, and topics were sensitive. I think we know what that's like.
No, I have no idea.
And if Virgil didn't get things just right, he might end up feeding feelings of conflict and animosity and sparking more civil unrest. He wanted to unite the Romans with a story of overcoming the odds to build something great. Virgil wanted to write Rome's mythological origins by using Homer's old stories, which the Roman public were already very familiar with, as the vehicle.
You have to toe a very distinct line when you're doing propaganda. And also you kind of have to, like, trust that the people who receive the propaganda aren't smart enough to see through you, which often doesn't go very well. I guess there were not the internet, though, in those times.
Oh, for sure. And, like, in the 1950s, the CIA, like, commissioned an animated movie out of Animal Farm. And it's, like, super, super dark. But it was meant to be anti-communist propaganda, where they took an existing story and they were just like, we are going to make this so that it makes everyone hate communists. And made this super dark animated movie and, like, distributed it as just propaganda.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Okay.
So while sightseeing in Carthage, doing research for the Aeneid, having been writing it for 10 years, and editing it more, Virgil got heat stroke and died. He got dehydrated and overheated And that was the end of Virgil's mortal life.
Oh, okay.
Okay, so that's the end of the episode. Subscribe to Patreon.
You know, yeah, yeah.
Psych, there's a lot more. Because the thing about poets, which I am acutely aware of, is that when they die, they grow more powerful.
That is all artists, actually. Wasn't that Van Gogh that was like that, too? A lot of them. Picasso, I think, was that way, too.
Yeah, but I mean, you'll see with Virgil that this is like the upper limit of how powerful your post-mortem legend can get.
I guess that's the thing about like dead people is you can't really be like, yo, well, I can be like, is this true? A lot of people can't ask that. So you can kind of say whatever you want. Yeah.
On his deathbed, Virgil begged everyone to destroy the Aeneid and burn it so that it would never be released into the world. He hated it. He thought it was garbage. He didn't want anybody to have this piece of, like, crappy propaganda. He felt like he couldn't live up to Homer. He felt like it wouldn't unite the Romans. He felt like Augustus would, you know, not like it.
Okay, a concept, though. Just, like, just... Why don't we stop stealing things from other people and just, like, make our own shit? And then you aren't, like, trying to live up to anyone else's thing that you're not going to do as well. But, you know, that's okay. He's, you know. Also, that would be awful to be on your deathbed and be like, I wasted my life. I just wasted the last 10 years of my life.
I mean, this is, like, the biggest pressure poem ever because, like, the king is saying that I have to write this. If I don't write it just right, I'll spark more civil war. And I have to write better than the best writer who ever lived.
Would you not just run away? I would run away.
That's kind of what he did. Okay. He kind of just like wandered around Greece and just like, I'm just writing the Aeneid, just hanging out in, you know, the Aegean Sea. And I'm going to go to Carthage and just do research and definitely not just drink myself into a stupor and forget this was even a thing.
That's so much pressure. I don't know who could possibly handle that, honestly.
And also he just like died of heat stroke. Like
it's crazy to me.
Like, I know. It is just such a common way to die even today that we don't think of like these ancient deaths being so like bland.
Yeah, that's true.
It's like, oh yeah, he was ripped apart by lions. It's like, oh yeah, just got dehydrated. I wasn't water. Drinking water.
It's too much wine, not enough water.
Listeners, please drink water.
Yes, always.
Don't go the way of Virgil. Of course, Augustus, who was commissioning this propaganda piece, was having none of that. And Virgil had been reading little excerpts to him over time featuring the heroic deeds of the main character, literally the best parts of the main character, so that he would be like, oh, yeah, you're still working on this. Aeneas being a metaphor for Augustus Caesar. It was released after Virgil's death. And it was a hit, baby, straight to the top. Especially as the Roman Empire expanded, it became a sort of gospel, and Virgil was its prophet. So now let's talk about the plot of the Aeneid, because you said you weren't very familiar, and I know that you're very well-read, and I'm sure a lot of people are very well-read. Some people in high school may have covered this as like part of classical literature, but I don't know why you would when there's already the Odyssey.
Yeah,
the
when
Iliad.
There's like, yeah, because like, I went to school for theater, so I obviously know a lot about that, just have never heard this. So yes, please tell me the summary.
So just like Homer, it was written in dactylic hexameter, which is a very specific meter used for epic poems to heighten the language and help you memorize it.
Yeah.
But it was in Latin, not Greek. The story picks up after the Trojan War, but on the other side of the conflict. So Troy had been sacked. They'd fallen for the little horse trick. They'd fallen for the horse trick that would, you know, later inspire condoms. I mean, think about it. Like, you've got your little guys in the condom.
You want them to stay there.
There's just all inside.
I hate this.
But then if you think about it, it's very bad branding because you don't want the little guys to be released from the little Trojan horse. Because if that happens, the condom fails.
Yeah, and that's typically a bad thing.
But that was, like, the whole plan of, like, the Trojan horse.
Okay, now I want to know, like, why they named it, like, Trojan. Like, who was like, you know what? This is the – I mean, maybe they're the strongest. I don't know.
No, those are the Spartans, our legendary, like, warriors.
Now we're going to have to look at this.
The Trojans got their asses kicked in mythological history.
Okay. I was going to go into like a little like, well, but why then? And you know what? It doesn't matter. Okay.
So as Troy is just like burning, Aeneas is just like pissed. He shows up to Helen, who like, so beautiful. She launched 1,000 ships. And he was going to murder the shit out of her for causing the conflict, which like, rude. Not her fault.
Right.
And then Venus, his mother, stopped him and was like, it's not her fault, she's pretty.
Okay, I mean, true, but yeah.
Venus also told Aeneas that the destruction of Troy was preordained by the fates and that there was a prophecy that Aeneas would found a new nation that would be the greatest nation of all nations. So Aeneas grabbed the surviving Trojans, hopped on a boat, and started sailing around the Mediterranean trying to find a new home for his people.
Hmm.
His adventures at sea were literally just the Odyssey. It was literally the Odyssey.
This
like,
is
encounters
what it
was. The same characters, encounters the Cyclops and like Scylla, Charybdis, like all that, like from the Odyssey.
Where did the prophecy, like in the, I don't even know how to pronounce the name of this book.
The Aeneid?
Aeneid, yeah. There's a lot of E's and A's, and therefore I just don't know how to do it. But who was the prophetess or the seer in that? Does it say?
The Fates.
Just the Fates. Okay.
The Fates, yeah.
Okay, got it.
The three Fates.
Oh, of course.
With their
red thread, yeah.
With their thread.
Yeah.
And the gods knew about this.
Okay.
But Juno, which is the Romanized Hera,
mm-hmm.
Knew that part of this was that they were fated to, like, mess up Carthage, which was, like, a city that Juno liked a lot because they prayed to her and stuff.
Hmm.
And so Juno was the, I guess, antagonist of the Aeneid.
Okay.
At the end of like a lot of this like sailing around Odyssey stuff, Aeneas shows up in Carthage and meets the queen, whose name is Dido. Juno, being the antagonist, was constantly trying to thwart Aeneas from fulfilling his destiny, confusing him out at sea, but he finally arrived in Carthage. And so Juno is like, okay, here's what we're going to do. We're going to trap you in Carthage.
Okay.
So Juno tricks Venus into making Dido fall madly in love with Aeneas so that he'll stay in Carthage and not fulfill the prophecy. And so Aeneas just kind of like chills for a bit, you know, hangs
He's
out.
He's in love.
Hangs out on the beach. He's got the queen as his wife. And like, just like the Odyssey, she had like a long line of like suitors and like all that. And
mm-hmm.
he's just like, I'm a demigod. Skip me to the front. The gods ordained that we be together.
I'm rolling my eyes. You can't see it, but I am.
But the prophecy. But destiny. And so Aeneas is like, peace out. It was fun. I got to go, Queen Dido. I know you love me, but like, I've got to found this nation I'm supposed to found. And he just, like, leaves. And so Dido, racked with grief, constructs a funeral pyre with nobody on it, lights it up, then stabs herself to death and falls backwards on the pyre as he sails away.
Okay. All right. Wow.
Very grim. And also, like, rude, bro.
Rude.
like, if you wanted to fulfill the prophecy, like, don't get tangled up in this relationship.
Just, like, make better choices. I mean, really. Just be honest. Be clear.
Yeah,
clear communication. If that's not your end goal,
like, yeah, sorry.
Then just don't be in love,
like,
with someone.
Queen Dodo, I want you to know that how this relationship is going to end is I have to fulfill a prophecy.
Right. And, like, if she just wouldn't – oh, well, actually, it wasn't her fault because Venus had, like, cursed her to be in love.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, because that's what it is. Love spells are curses. It's fine. Okay.
Yeah. So Aeneas and crew keep sailing around. The gods cause trouble. They fight some monsters. It's more the Odyssey.
Mm-hmm.
And they land in the land of the Latins, where the king's daughter has a massive line of suitors, you know, all that. And Latinus, king of the Latins, received a prophecy after already, like, saying his daughter had to marry this other king. Mm-hmm. He receives a prophecy saying that his daughter must marry a foreigner. And then Aeneas just shows up, handsome demigod that he is. Problem, though, Lavina, the princess, was promised to the king of the Rutuli.
The what?
The Rutuli. I'm guessing that's how you say it. The Rutuli.
You can't see RJ, but he is like holding out like the chef's kiss. Rutuli. And he's like putting his head down. He's like, Rutuli. It's quite the image.
She's like supposed to marry him by some ancient rite. And so war breaks out. Mm-hmm. And now the Aeneid transitions from ripping off the Odyssey to ripping off the Iliad.
Okay.
Lavina being the stand-in for Helen of Troy, of course.
Okay.
Long story short, Aeneas wins, becomes king of the Latins, founds Rome, prophecy fulfilled, Bob's your uncle, can't escape fate, and all that's left for Rome is to be the greatest empire ever. So let's set aside our differences and conquer the world.
Yeah.
Because we're from a godly bloodline, and the gods and the fates conspired to make us the best in the world.
I am so, like, the more I think about how often people are like, God decided I needed to have all of this to me, it just makes me even more be like, okay, well, God isn't real, so that's just not even a thing. Well,
especially the Roman gods, who are the Roman/Greek gods.
Roman and Greek gods don't give a single fuck about humans. Like, they just want to have sex with them, pretty much. So, like, I don't know why someone's like, you know what, I've decided you are the one.
But it's the fates, though. It's the fate. Fate.
You know what? Okay.
So, the Aeneid is a book full of prophecy, fatalism, and Roman exceptionalism.
Okay.
Because of this, the poem has been used in bibliomancy for 2,000 years. Divination using Virgil's works is called the Sortes Virgiliani, or the Virgilian Lots.
The Virgilian Lots.
The Virgilian Lots.
Okay.
A man named Hadrian drew Aeneid 6808. Predicting that he would be adopted by the emperor and would become emperor. He did. Later, Alexander Severus drew Aeneid 6851, predicting he would become emperor. And the list goes on of Roman emperors predicting their rises to power and victories in battle. And this is what solidified Virgil, not as a poet, but as a diviner, a mystic, a magician in the minds of the Romans.
I forgot that we were even looking at him as like a psychic. I totally forgot about that. Okay.
He really wasn't until he died.
Like, also, I don't know that you could really call him a psychic. He didn't do anything. He wrote a book. He like ripped off a book.
Yeah.
Like, that's it. That's all he did.
It's just his book is magic and can predict.
I mean,
emperors.
Anything can be magic. And I think, like, what makes things magic is your belief in them. So I guess if they decided it was prophecy, then it was.
Yeah, and this belief in Virgil would influence Dante Alighieri to put him in his own epic poem as a guide through hell, being the diviner and, like, the guide that helps, you know, determine who's going to be emperor and the fatalism and everything.
I want to go find Virgil's spirit and, like, ask him what he thinks about this.
He's like, I'm just glad I don't have to fucking write this anymore.
Yeah, he's probably like, you know, sometimes you just think it isn't very good, but it's okay, and people will like it. Like, that's probably what you would say.
And Dante's depiction of Virgil would launch him to the next level even more.
Okay.
His post-mortem reputation would only grow and twist as we go into the medieval ages. Mm-hmm. A whole compendium of folk tales and legends about Virgil the magician began to spread.
Okay.
And now.
He's just this guy who just, died from not drinking enough water and hated his book. Like,
he wrote a fan fiction he hated and died of heat stroke.
And yet he's the magician. And I mean, that's like, I don't even know if he would be upset or like proud. I guess, you know, maybe proud because it is like he's Roman.
A lot of like our modern like pop culture concept of magicians comes from like these Virgil folk tales, like the idea of like the wizard as the, or the magician as like the wise man who knows things and teaches you lessons with his magic comes from like these legends about Virgil.
Wow. Okay.
And now I've got my copy of the Aeneid.
Okay.
Let's do some bibliomancy. All right, I've got a copy of the Aeneid right here. This reading is for John. Shout out to John for supporting us on Patreon, our first subscriber.
Yay, John. Okay, so are there any specific instructions I'm supposed to follow to do this? Or do I just like flip through?
There's kind of like two ways to do it. You could either like draw from a bunch of stones that have all the verse numbers written on them. The other way is to just like flip through the pages, find the one that calls to you to answer the question or do the divination.
Okay. So I have done bibliomancy before, so I'm just going to do the thing. John said he doesn't have any specific questions he wants me to do. So I'm just going to do general.
General. Like, what's up?
Just what do the space ghosts have to say to me today?
Yeah.
That's okay. What we're going to do. Okay. I go. Oh, these are words I cannot pronounce.
are they all in Latin or just some of them?
They're names. So I hope that our listeners are forgiving. It's fine. I got this. Saved from the Greeks, will there never be any walls for Troy again? No Simois or Xanthus, the rivers Hector loved? Come with me, burn these vessels of ill omen. Let me tell you, I have been given warnings in a dream. I saw Cassandra. So...
How do you spell the words you couldn't pronounce?
S-I-M-O-I-S.
It was a river of the Trojan Plain. It's like the name of a river.
And then I think Xanthus is also one because it says the rivers Hector loved. So referring to those.
Oh, and the Xanthus.
Yes.
The Xanthus is, yeah, also a river. Two immortal horses. Like one of the immortal horses was also named Xanthus. And Poseidon was its father. Poseidon fathered an immortal horse. Of course.
Okay. Yeah. yeah. So I think it's kind of interesting. Come with me, burn these vessels of ill omen. It's kind of like, let's get rid of the things that carry bad news. Like things that only like have negative connotations. It's time to let go of those, like to release them. Let me tell you, I've been given warnings in a dream. I saw Cassandra. If you don't know who Cassandra is, she's she's a seer, and she is cursed with no one ever believing her when she predicts the future. I have a tattoo of Cassandra on my thigh, actually. It's kind of interesting because it's like you need to listen to what your guides are telling you. Like, you know what's happening. You're having dreams. You're having visions of these things. And you need to – you know what you need to do. You know what you need to get rid of. You know the things that are causing issues and, like, vexing you. So it's time to let go of those things and really listen to your intuition. Because where I'm seeing I've been given warnings in a dream, that can also just be communication with your guides. Yeah, it's time to kind of let go of the things that you know aren't serving you and let yourself, like, have better opportunities. I want to do another one.
Okay. Well, in the Aeneid, I'm pretty sure that verse is from the part of the book where they arrive in Sicily/Rome and they burn their ships so that they are forced to build their kingdom there.
Mm.
It's like there's no turning back. Kind of like I've been rewatching Full Metal Alchemist because it was October 3rd.
Of course.
Like, don't forget.
I know. October I got 3rd. Forced into watching it with OJ and I was like, okay.
and they burn their house down so that they know that they can't go back because they have nothing to go back to. It's a lot like that.
Damn. That's like, we were talking, RJ and I were talking about me being a professional psychic and that I constantly feel like if I could just be normal, like if I could just have a normal job, if I didn't have to be a psychic, my life would be so different. And we were talking about just like really making a run for it. Like either I'm going to be a psychic or I'm going to die. And it's that kind of idea of like burning down what you had to go back to. Like it's time to let go of the things that you had in the past. They're not saving you. They're not pacifying you even. They're just sitting there as like kind of this thing that you can't ever return to. So at a certain point you have to let go and just go for it. You just have to go forward and make it work or not. That's what it is. Okay. So then the next passage I got also has names. So I hope I do them okay. The first one is Aeneas and Achates, A-C-H-A-T-E-S, listening, brooded with downcast gaze and troubled speculation, prolonging bittered thoughts. But Venus gave them a sign from the bright heaven. A flash of thunder came from the cloudless sky, a blare of trumpets, and all the things suddenly shaken. They looked up swiftly, again and again. They heard the roar and rumble. They saw arms redden in the clear of heaven. Listen to the thunder and cloud. So, John, you know what you're supposed to do. Even getting the call to go do the thing that you need to do. And it's just time to stop clinging on to the past and just do it. Just commit to the future that you have and stop trying to change the messages that you're getting. Stop trying to make sense of them. You know that they make sense. You already know what the thing is, and you're the one that isn't listening. When we look at the trumpets, and I don't know, did they have trumpets like in that time period? Probably like the equivalent of a horn.
Yeah, like a horn.
Okay, because biblically, when Gabriel blows the trumpets, he's bringing everyone home. So it's like the messenger of God, the mouthpiece of God is Archangel Gabriel. And so when you look at the trumpets, that's in the tarot, the card of judgment is talking about this exact thing. And it has Archangel Gabriel blowing his trumpet. And the idea of judgment is that you're being called to a higher purpose that there's...
Aeneas is literally, that's the whole book.
That's the thing, is it's him being, like, called to go do the thing. And it's, like, at this point, when you're getting a flash of thunder from a cloudless sky and you hear blaring trumpets, like, listen, just listen to your stuff. Do the thing you're supposed to do. I'm getting chills. It's like, come on, John, get it together, do your stuff, and stop messing around, stop, like, making excuses for it to not work.
I could see why somebody would read this and be like, well, I'm probably going to be emperor.
Right. Like, well, I mean, when you're like looking at it and it's a book about a guy who's supposed to be emperor, when that's the thing. Yeah, that's kind of, that would be.
And the name you mentioned, Achates, that is Aeneas's like best friend, possibly intimate. He's the stand-in basically for Patroclus, for like Patroclus was for Achilles.
Okay.
Where he's like, they're really close friends, maybe lovers.
Okay, but everyone in like Greek and Roman times had like same-sex partners and different sex partners and free love babies. So yeah, it's just them kind of responding to that. It's kind of interesting. Like the other thing I want to point out about this is the first part. So listening, brooded with downcast gaze and troubled speculation, prolonging bitter thoughts. It's kind of like sitting in your own, like, gross goop in your brain, like depression thoughts. And it's like you have, like, literally Venus being like, hello, could you pay attention to what I'm telling you? I'm telling you what to do. You already know what to do. Stop, like, indulging in the bullshit in your brain. Stop feeding into, like, the depressive cycle. Stop doing that. And, like, wake up, answer the call. You know, I think the other thing that's interesting is that, and this I think is a message for all of us, that we need to, if you know and you're getting the nudges from the universe and you're feeling it and you know what you need to do, then you need to do that. It's not going to get better until you do the thing. So sometimes you just have to like pull the Band-Aid off and do what you need to do.
Okay, John, I hope you liked your reading. It sounded really informative to me.
I think it was a call-out post, and John's probably going to be pretty upset.
Isn't all divination just a call-out post?
If it isn't a call-out post, what do people pay me for? Like, I am here to call people on their bullshit and then ask them to do better. And so I do that.
Well, that was the that was divination with the Aeneid.
Mm-hmm.
We're about to jump into part two where we will talk about Virgil, the mythological magician, and all the crazy stuff he apparently did before he died of heat stroke. And then we will attempt more bibliomancy with my own book of poems. I wouldn't say it's an epic, but it's definitely a journey. And it's inspired by the original Pokemon games. So we'll see if I have the makings of being a poet magician in part two. Thank you for listening to Mancy. I'm RJ Walker. You can find my poetry and writing at rjwalkerpoet.com. This episode was written and produced by me. You can find me at Dollar Compliments on Instagram or RJ Walker Spoken Word on Facebook. We also made a TikTok, Mancy Podcast.
My name is Elle Elder. I'm a professional psychic, and you can find me for readings on my Twitter at Laurels of Lux, which is L-A-U-R-E-L-S of Lux, L-U-X. And that is also the name of my Etsy store where you can order readings from me at any time.
If you would like to have Elle do a divination reading on the show using whatever divination method we're covering, you can support us on Patreon, patreon.com/Mancy. Music was provided by, in order of appearance, Hayden Folker, Miyu, and Scott Buckley. A few corrections. Virgil wasn't sightseeing in Carthage when he got heatstroke. He was sightseeing in Megara. And the fishing show featuring Searle Chaquet isn't called River Monsters, it's called Chasing Monsters. Different shows. Oh, and remember Queen Dido, the love-struck queen of Carthage? Well, when she committed suicide by stabbing herself and burning on the pyre, she uttered a curse that there would always be eternal strife between Aeneas' people and hers. Rise up from my bones, avenging spirit. Some scholars believe this is a reference to the Second Punic War and the general Hannibal.